This is Beyond the Pass, conversations with people from all walks of hospitality life. Centering mental health, Beyond the Pass is a conversation about life, hospitality, and what makes us get out of bed each day. Beyond the Pass is brought to you by Kelly's Cause, and the conversational digressions are brought to you by me, your host, Rachel Kerlapsley. If you can take a minute to like, rate, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, that would be very much appreciated. Without listeners like yourselves, we couldn't keep having these brilliant conversations. Enjoy the episode and keep taking care of each other. I just wanted to quickly apologize for the sound in this episode. For some reason, it sounds like I recorded this in the bottom of a well. I have no idea why. I promise we will get a really beautiful mic for season 4. So please enjoy this episode despite that beautiful well environment and this fabulous conversation with Tom Reese. Welcome back to Beyond the Pass. We have arrived at the final episode of the season, and we are delighted to have Tom Reese here in conversation. Hailing from Wales, Tom has spent the last 7 years in London working at many renowned industry haunts, including Trullo, Club Mexicana, and Bobolo London, where they now work as a supervisor and D&I advocate. As a non-binary individual, Tom deeply values inclusivity and strives to create a welcoming environment in all of their endeavors. Recently, Tom completed their BSc in Human Nutrition and launched their own consultancy, Wild Nutrition, marking the start of their career in nutrition alongside their advocacy work in hospo. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
I just want to start by asking how you got started in hospo.
Well, I mean, I'm from like a tiny town in Wales. It's like, what, 900 people live there? So it's quite, it's quite like small. And just from the age of 18, like my mum, she was a chef. My sister was a chef. My auntie was a chef. Like we all kind of worked in the same restaurant throughout our kind of like generations in my hometown. So I started at the age of 13 just because it was either like that or start smoking and drinking, which then I did do later on down the line. And I was just like, I kind of just want some money. So why not? Because my parents were like, if you want something, you need to earn it. And I was like, okay. Yeah. So I had like a pretty sick, my first job at 12, 13 was doing the barbecues at the summertime at the pub. And they paid me £12.50 an hour.
I know people right now who aren't making £12.50 an hour.
Yeah, literally. And I mean, like, I've had worse paying jobs than that since. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And this would have been also, like, you're way older than 13 now.
Way older than 13.
15 years ago or something?
Yeah, this was what? This was, like, 14 years ago.
I absolutely love that. And what was the... Did you like it? Like, did you enjoy the actual work?
Yeah, I think like when you're that age, I think it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go to work. And it was quite fun because it's like new. And then when you start earning your own money, like I remember opening up my first bank account after that summer and was like, oh my God, I'm an adult. Little did I know there's a lot more to come. like you're 13, babe, like pipe down. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I kind of like, because that whole town is based on, it's like a holiday home destination. Like lots of like Londoners have got second homes there. So it was more just during the summertime, really crazy busy. And it was just nice. Like you got to meet loads of people, but then also you, like in any hospitality job, you get bored of it because it's so repetitive and then are sick of serving people.
Yeah. It's like amazing to meet like new fancy people who are unlike the people from your town. And then you're also like, would you fuck
literally
off back
like, I made a lot of connections as well, which like at the age of 13, I was networking or whatever. Like, but like I made a lot of connections, so like when I moved to London there was lots of people, they were like, oh, you can stay at our house while you get on your feet and stuff like that. So it was like good in that sense.
I always think of people who have second homes as being like, I'm kind of angry about it because I'm jealous. Yeah, like, but it turns out they're good people too, so I should
like, I can't wait to have a home for starters and then a second one.
Yeah I'm like also like a whole house. I'm like, what do you even do with that much space? What do you do if your suitcase is just like a pillow for you, you know? What was the best hospitality job you ever had, and what was the worst hospitality job you ever had?
Let me think. I'd say the best one I had was when I lived in Melbourne, and I worked for like, I worked in this deli, and it was run by a Greek family. So it was like three brothers and a sister, and they were just the like Greek Australian, and they were just the funniest people to work with. And just like their family dynamic is just hilarious. So that was like a lot of fun, and it was cash in hand. So it was just like, great. Like literally the amount of money I had at the end of the week was, I was like, I need to, how do I look after this? Do you know what I mean? So I'd say that was like the best job. Like, I remember one of them going on holiday to Greece and we called them up and I was like, oh, are they having fun? And they were like, yeah, they smashed a shit ton of plates already, so they're having a great time, kind of thing. Like, they just like, it was just a really good vibe. And then, yeah, I'd say that's the best one I had. And because I was in Australia and it was fun. And then the worst one would probably be Caravan. I'm like, don't get me wrong, it was a great, I've got like a group of friends now, there's like 10 of us and we all met there. And we've been friends for like 5-6 years now. So like, that was the beautiful part of it. But I think when you're part of a company and it expands really quickly, it's really difficult to be a part of that because a lot of the values get lost in it. Yeah, and I think I was there for like 3.5 years, so it was time to go. Like, I worked at nearly all of them because I was just like, right, I'm sick of this one, take me to another one.
And what sort of sparked the move into the D&I space? Was it something that you'd been thinking about for a long time?
I mean, sometimes I'm like, I'll literally just so I don't have to work on the floor for 5 hours a week. but it is so much more than that. Like, I did a little bit of it with Caravan, but there it was very much so like a box ticking thing to get done in a sense. And their values was like inclusivity, blah, blah, blah. And they kind of just got lost when they expanded. And did like some sustainability work and stuff with them as well. But again, like a box ticking thing. And I think it's hard to implement stuff when there's a company that big. So I started there and then, yeah, I mean, I was just working at Bubbler and then Shola, who used to do D&I, she stepped down. And then so like the vacancy was available. So I kind of interviewed for it and it was kind of, was like, what do you want to do with this role? And gave a presentation and that kind of stuff. And I think it is like, because I think I was treated quite badly as like a queer person in a lot of places I've worked, specifically Caravan, not like shining a big light on it, but it was quite bad there for women and queer people, I think, although they capitalized on queer people and being like, we're edgy and like express yourself and that kind of stuff. So I kind of wanted to be able to make a difference somewhere else, and because Bubbler's team were quite like a queer inclusive team anyway, so that was kind of like the spark, and kind of just didn't want shit to happen to other people that kind of happened to me.
If you don't mind talking about it, what did you like understand while you were in it that the treatment you were having was discriminatory and there was shit going on that wasn't cool? Or was it sort of with the benefit of hindsight where you were like, that was so fucked? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's now because like, what, I'm older, like I'm 27 now, I know myself a bit more. Like, I'm comfortable in my own skin, where like when you're like a 21-year-old and you're a restaurant manager doing like 600 cover brunches, hanging out your ass because you got wasted the night before, like it was that kind of hospo culture. I think you're just in it, and I think there is a talent that some places have that they make you feel so lucky to be part of that business, when really it's like, Bab, if I'm not going to turn up today, you're absolutely screwed. Like, who's going to run the shift for you? It's actually the other way. Can't see that until you step out of it. And I think the last thing that drew the line with that was I went, when COVID hit and there was furlough and stuff, I went backpacking to Thailand just as the world was shutting down, because why the fuck not? And yeah, and then I came back and Caravan refused to give me furlough. And I was like, cool, so I'm screwed.
And you'd been with them for 3.5 years.
I just opened up their Chelsea branch as well then. So it was like, so that was the last straw. And I think...
That's honestly
fucked. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was just a bit screwed for like a couple of months for money.
Something that people will ask, or something that I see sometimes, is people wonder, like, how do I know that my treatment in this environment as a queer person isn't right? Because it's so subtle sometimes. Yeah. And like you said, like that feeling of not being able to totally understand until you're out of it. Can you think of like particular indicators that like would have been helpful for you, or that maybe were helpful for you in being like, no?
Just more, I think it's like having more awareness of it, and like just knowing that I think as a queer person, you always have some form of guard up, or you're always a bit hesitant about everything because you're not sure how it's going to go down. Like even now, I kind of feel a bit, if there's like a table of four like businessmen, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, do you know what I mean? And then like, I'm like, yeah. Oh, I'd like to not serve this table just because I don't know how it's going to go. And then sometimes they're absolutely fine. So it's, you're always questioning it that way. But I think it's kind of in the business if there was just more awareness and maybe just the right terminology and just the respect for people's pronouns and their identities and things like that, then I think it would have just come naturally. And then I would have known in the moment that actually you're being a twat, leave me alone kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's something about being able to knowing that if you go to a table and something does happen, that when you turn around and you're like, well, I need to give away that table, or like, that was fucked, that the business is going to be like, of course you do. And we're really sorry that happened. And like, that's like, it's feeling like you'll be backed up. When I think about a group of employees, it's like, who automatically outs themselves by arriving to take the drink order and who doesn't? And like, I have tons of passing privilege in terms of being queer. And so for me, it's like my safety, if I gauged it right, I would be fine. Although that's not, things still happen all the time, but it's like, who's the most vulnerable person on this team in terms of catching shit? And does that person feel safe and protected? Yeah. And often, I don't know if you would see this also, but I see like maybe like a gay man at the top who has a lot of money and they feel safe and comfortable at work. Yeah. And so they're like, this is a really gay friendly place to work. And this is so fabulous. And And everyone's like, good for us. I don't know if you've met our COO, a homosexual. And what gets lost in that conversation is like, okay, well, they feel safe and that's great. But it's like, who are you missing? Who are you not seeing? And if that person feels safe at work, then it's probably an indication that you're doing something right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's really hard, I think, in hospo especially, because it's such a fast moving environment, just constantly go until you literally shut the door and shutters. I think it's hard to always keep everyone happy as well. But I think there is also like the minimum that you can do, you know?
I don't think it's about keeping anyone happy, although that's nice when you can do it. It's about creating psychological safety.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And that to me is the thing that's important. And I think that sort of where it gets misconstrued is that people, and like during the London elections, like reading what all of them were saying, and I was just like, where did you get your, like, why do you think this is what's happening? This idea that it's like, well, we never promised you a rose alphabet soup, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, people aren't asking for a rose garden. They literally just want to be safe when they come to work, and they want to feel safe when they come to work, which to me does not feel that revolutionary.
It's really not, like, funny that. It's, like, it's really not asking for much either. I think it's just, especially, like, we live in London and we live in, like, the UK. It's, like, an extremely developed place. It's, like, it's a privilege. Like, it should just come anyway. But it's, yeah, I think it's strange. I mean, I'm speaking for myself here, but maybe you can relate. It's, like, when you surround yourself with like-minded people. So all my friends are queer, that kind of thing. And then when you witness some form of like homophobia or queerphobia or transphobia or something, you're like, fucking hell, does that still exist? Because you're not used to it. And it kind of makes you jump a little bit, because you're like, oh my god, shit, that's still going on. Like, you know, like the fact that like the Tories are still in power, I'm like, how? You know, because the people I surround myself with are like, fuck them. But then you step out of London and everyone's like, oh my god, I love them, you know?
I think, it's so easy to insulate yourself here, and it's so easy to forget. And I think this is the thing that hospitality, one of the reasons why it's not challenging in a bad way, but challenging in a good way, is that you are going to work with so many different people from so many different places. And the fact that there are restaurant environments or hospitality environments where people do show up just with their full chest in all of their multitudes, and you might be working next to a guy who, like, if you saw how they voted, like, you know, it would be appalling, but you show up with compassion for each other, you're nice to each other, you check in. It sort of means that you can't hide or pretend like all of this stuff doesn't exist, because the mix of people, whether that's guests, customers, whatever, or your coworkers, is just so varied. But that also presents such a challenge to businesses. And like, how do we keep these spaces political enough that people feel safe, but like not so political that like we're a restaurant? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I think it's like, I've had this conversation lately and it's been like restaurants aren't political. And I'm like, are you stupid? Restaurants are political. I feel like everything that we do is political, especially in this world. Like, everything we do is political. You can't be apolitical in what we're doing, in a sense. Like, and like, we do a lot of community work and stuff like that. So it's like, you can't say that you're not political if you're doing like community outreach work and like funding things and doing fundraisers. And do you know what I mean? So I think it's, it is trying to find that balance, because you also don't want to, I mean, with places like Bubbler, for instance, like everyone is so, we pride ourselves in like our self-expression and stuff like that. Like we want everyone to be like their original authentic selves. And then also if you don't want to, then that's fine. If you're coming to work just to work to leave, bab, that's absolutely fine. Right. You know what I mean? Like yeah. Sometimes it's healthy to have that mentality because you're not too connected to it then. Like leave work at the door kind of thing, you know, like when you leave. I think then it's hard to ask for people not to have like opinions on things and maybe bring stuff into work in a sense. Because if you're at an establishment for like minimum 40 hours a week, that's your life. Do you know what I mean? And then your life does go on outside of work, but your work is your life as well. I don't care what people say, like your work is your life. So how do you feed yourself?
It's also that balance between as an individual or like as a queer person, like, when you walk into a job, knowing that you're under no obligation to disclose that, like, yeah, your personal life is personal. But I think queerness isn't about who you're fucking. It's about your humanity, and that's who you are. And so when you arrive in those environments, like, sort of what's your responsibility and what's the responsibility of your employer? It's confusing.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, and I guess it's kind of like a lot of people feel like they can't speak up or because it might put their job in jeopardy or something like that in some places especially. And I think it's like what that talk that we went to about like being pregnant in hospitality and stuff like that and like maternity leave and things like that, because you never quite know where you stand sometimes because there is that shift in power, that imbalance in power, because you're the employee, do you know what I mean? Like you're not the employer, you're not the boss. So it's kind of your fate. It sometimes always weighs in somebody else's hand, which is such like a harsh, unstable thing sometimes. If you're in a company that can really, that really like takes advantage of that in a sense. You know, like, there's loads of amazing employers out there, but there's some that will just like drop you on your ass without any notice.
Yeah, totally. It's that feeling of not saying anything to be palatable.
Yeah.
Or because you're not quite sure how it's going to go down, or it's going to maybe, you don't want to make other people uncomfortable. And those little acts of censorship can create a really, really bad situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In terms of like shutting yourself down and shutting yourself out. And that sort of negotiation of like, what are my non-negotiables? What are things for me where it is truly unacceptable for me to stand here and make this person money? What are my red lines? And really sticking to those things. And then if it doesn't cross your red line, then it's a different negotiation. Maybe it's a one-on-one conversation or it's sitting down with an owner operator or whatever. But I think that is sort of the work that we're maybe not doing as queer people, is before we go into a workplace being like, all right, what are my boundaries here around this? And am I committed to finding another gig if these things aren't happening?
Yeah, and I think it goes back to just basically making sure and wanting just to feel safe when you're at work. Like it's, I think, like I always joke around in work, I'm like, I spend so much time in this tiny little room, you know, like, and we do so much in that tiny little room, like up and down the stairs in that building. It's like, oh, this is kind of like our home in a sense. So people that come in and if they're like not nice to us, it's like, would you do that in somebody else's home? No, like this is my place of work. And I know that I'm like here to serve you, but it's still my place of work. It's funny because it's like, I think some people don't realize, it's like, bab, if you are not good to me, you're not getting your food.
Yeah, people think that they're in control, but...
like, I'm in control of your evening. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think you're recognizing the power balance here. Like, it's not what you think it is.
It's subtle and it's very, very real.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Has anything really surprised you since you started doing D&I stuff? In terms of like, oh, I really thought the industry was this way, but or hearing more things from more queer people and being like, wow, this is happening. Do you know?
Yeah, I think it surprised me with how big, I guess in a sense, it would be like a movement in a way through hospitality and how it's kind of, you know, like the old school restaurateurs that started like what, like 15 years ago, like Polpo, Trullo, all of those like restaurant groups, like the old school ones. I think that, and like being in a kitchen and it was like, oh yeah, it was normal if your head chef like stabbed you in the hand. Like, it's like, oh, okay, cool. I think it surprised me with how much the movement is and how much like, and then when I came across like Kelly's Cause and what you guys do, and then I've been to like Be Inclusive Hospitality talks and stuff, like I was quite surprised with how much is actually being done in the industry. And yeah, it's still not quite enough, because if it's such an it's such like a ingrained thing into society, like hospitality. And I think trying to, and once you start unraveling one thing, everything starts unraveling, and then it's just like an absolute minefield of trying to, I think it's just like society in general, isn't it? It's like when you start taking apart capitalism, you're screwed. So it's, you know, so it's kind of like that. But I think I was just a bit shocked with like how much is actually being done. And I think how much free rein I have in Bubbler to kind of do what I want. Of course, like I don't just do what I want to do. Like, obviously I'll talk to Raj and Mark and be like, right, this is what I'm thinking. Let's do a fundraiser. Let's do this. Or like, I've reached out to these people. Like, it's always like run through them and we have a conversation about it, but they're like, yeah, like work on something, come to us kind of stuff. It's not focused in on one thing like I think it was, and when it is like a box ticking thing, this like, no, we just focus on this thing, let's do this tiny little thing kind of thing. So it's and I guess there's only so much you can do as one person and one business, but I think it adds up.
I think you bring up something really interesting in, it's surprising like how much there is that you sort of can do. And when I think about my like last few jobs before I started working in the sort of like well-being space, quote unquote, I had no idea that any of this was going on. I was a general manager of like 60 people and I didn't know what an EAP was or how it worked or like that we had one. Like, that's wild to me now. Yeah. And so I can sit here and I can be like, here's employment law that exists to protect you in a restaurant. And the fact that somebody who is like, you know, I'm white, I come from Canada, I'm university educated, was sitting in a restaurant not knowing that any of that was happening. So what does that mean? And again, that goes back to like, if I don't even know that that exists, then what about the most vulnerable people on your team who maybe don't speak English or newly arrived or whatever? And so I think that I really relate to that. It surprises me too. But I think in a way, it's kind of exciting, because to have a restaurant that's only two sites, being like, your lived experience is mostly on the floor. Like, you're a supervisor, you're here, you do service. So we need you to tell us what needs to happen here. Because that's another thing I see all the time, is that like decision makers are so far removed from the lived experience of the people that are doing the bulk of the work.
Yeah, and it kind of goes down, goes like down through the managers into the front of house. And I think it's like, it's literally just gets so, it's just gets so off topic then by the time it gets down to like the bottom to say.
It's also just not that effective. So you spend all this time like thinking about something and how we're going to execute it and how we're going to roll it out. And then you do it. And then, you know, the majority of your business is like, this doesn't help us. It's not what we need. And if only you'd like, I don't know, had someone helping or asked, it would change everything, you know?
I guess it's like what we do in engagement surveys. So you hear, so we kind of get, that's a good opportunity for as many people as possible. Like, obviously you're not going to get like 100% engagement in that. But I'm analyzing it at the moment and it's like good to do that. And then I also host like every three months I do like a Bubbler community meeting. So like I specifically like invite people like front of house, back of house from Soho Spitz. And then we kind of, Mark and Raj are there and we talk through stuff and have like pointers. So like that's kind of, and it's like a company update. It's like what's happening at Bubbler. So everyone's kind of updated. And I think that's really important to kind of have people from each level, because you don't know what's happening. Because you could have your, if you're like at the top of the company, like high up, you probably have your rose colored glasses on and you're like, everything's great. And I think if like the money's coming in, you think everything's great. But I think also you need to look after the like people's well-being. And like, it's a company, of course you want to make money. Like, we all want to make money. We are literally, we're products of capitalism. Like, I cannot wait for retirement. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's gonna happen. And when I say retirement, I want to specify early retirement.
Like, I want to retire in the next 3 years. I will retire probably at like 98. Yeah.
I finished my degree, so I'm retiring. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
hospitality has played such like a vital role in queer life. And like, hospitality, like, were the original safe spaces, whether that was bars or restaurants or private clubs or whatever. And I think it's interesting that these places that are like complete symbols of like safety and freedom and all of this stuff are also part of this industry that's been pretty unwelcoming for folks that are like queer or gender nonconforming, like in the day to day. Why do you think that is? And what do you think is sort of the fundamental shift that needs to happen for people to bring their whole selves into work?
Well, I guess I feel like queer spaces started because what we were just constantly being oppressed and had nowhere to go because everything was just made for heterosexuals. Because I think as a queer person, you usually, it depends where you grow up, but I mean, especially I'm speaking about my own experience, like growing up in Wales, rural Wales, like it wasn't exactly, oh my God, you're gay, we love you. You know, it was like, get away from me, you're gay, I don't want to be your friend. Like, are you a girl? Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like they're like all the awful words that you could be called, which I feel like now we have claimed back, which I love. And sometimes people look at me weirdly when I say them and I'm like, you know what? I'm allowed to say that. I've earned the right to say these things. Yeah. But I think
my head was put into a toilet, so I'm going to throw the slurs around as I like.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Like this is, I'm taking the power back. All right. So get out my fucking way. But it's, I think that's the way, I think that's the thing. Like these spaces were created because it's like, so we could be together and feel safe. And then I think like anything good, anything successful, it does just get taken over by the white straight man in some way. Because the world is built for these people. It's built around them. I think it is. I think you don't want to really go to a restaurant. Like I would never really go to a restaurant if I didn't see like-minded people working there. You know, like I think it was, what was it? When I was working at Trullo, me and my ex-partner and the senior Sue, we were the only queer people there. And that was it. And then Trullo, like obviously the clientele are a bit older, I'd say, and wealthier and that kind of vibe. And it's great. Like I really loved working there. And I think they do look after their staff well. But it was when they did, you know, the Eat Out to Help Out, whatever, that thing that basically gave everyone COVID.
Yeah, I was managing a restaurant at that time and it was the worst time of my life.
It was hell. It was awful. But also then we saw so many, we like actually saw people of color coming in through the door because I think it was like an opportunity for them to, because first of all, it's an extremely expensive restaurant anyway, but I think it wasn't heard about. And I think, yeah, it was giving people, it was just getting more people in through the door, but more variety of people, not like the old white people that like don't want me to pour their wine for them, but we know exactly what wine they want and we know what water they drink and like we have a whole profile of them because they're like some top dog in the publishing industry or something, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like it's like, Bab, I don't want to write a book, I don't want to be a friend, it's fine. So it's like, I'll pour your wine if I want to pour your wine. If I'm bored and I've got nothing to do, I'm pouring your wine, bitch, okay?
You're right. I haven't thought about it that way, that it brought out a really, really diverse group of diners. And I would be the same. Like, I went to a restaurant because I was like, if I'm having to work in this horse shit, I'm definitely going to enjoy it. And I ate at so many restaurants that I would never consider going to, either because, like, I wouldn't feel comfortable there, or they were too expensive or whatever. And, yeah, I ate at a ton of places that I wouldn't have even thought of.
And also, you were helping out the economy, do you know what I mean? So you're doing your bit.
And I can feel good about it. Yeah.
But no, I think it's strange because I think that there's just always been, like, even when you think of chefs and stuff like that, it's always been just like men at the top always. There hasn't been much of a diverse group of like people at the top. So the pop-up that so it's really good because we've got my best mate Dermot, he's a queer chef.
We did a blog with him like years ago and he was so brilliant.
He's great. He's a lot of fun. And like he's like a queer chef at like the top of his game and it's so nice to see. And then like my other friend Dara, who's the owner and head chef of Tiella and the Compton Arms, she's queer and she's just like bossing it. And it's just so nice to see that rather than just all these men just like standing outside a restaurant with their arms crossed, looking like they're gonna beat you with a fish.
It's just, I know exactly the picture that you're talking about.
Right, thank you. Yeah, like arms crossed and then there might be like a little woman's head in the middle somewhere that's being drowned out by like biceps.
100%.
I think that, and then now it's kind of like, because I think there's, it's so heavy. I think every society is so heavy on labeling everything. So now you've just got your gay bars. You've got your lesbian bar that's just opened in London that I really want to go to. Not that I'm a lesbian, but I mean, inclusive space. So I can go. And I guess you've kind of got like I was out for drinks yesterday with my friend and I was like, I want to go somewhere queer. I don't want to be like in a straight pub. Please, no, thank you. And I don't want to go somewhere with like really cool straight people that think they're queer, but they're not.
Oh, fuck no, no, thank you. A cool straight bar full of people who are like, whilst I've never munched a box, I do align myself. I'm like, you're no good to me.
It's like, oh.
And also, I don't even care if you've only done it once or twice. Like, I'm here for my bisexual sisters that had one fling and then married a man. Like, I'm like, good for you. It counts. But what I'm not here for is like never.
Yeah. Oh my God, absolutely. Like some people are like, oh, Tom, how did you know? Like when I came, it's like the whole journey of me like coming out gay and then non-binary and then like now I identify as queer. But it's like when I came out gay, they're like, how did you know that you're gay? And I was like, oh, because I had sex with a woman and I didn't like it. And they're like, oh, interesting. And I'm like, yeah. And then you've got like what they call like platinum gays or whatever they call them that have like never been near a woman or almost like a cesarean.
Those are the worst misogynists I've ever known.
A gay man, yeah, like most of the time they're a TERF at the end of the day, so.
100%. I don't know what I asked you.
Just those weird, I guess we were kind of going down the line of like appropriating queerness in a sense.
That's literally not what I asked you. You're welcome to talk about that if you want.
What did you ask me?
I think it's like queer hospitality venues are so important in the community and in the culture. But the industry as a whole tends to do a very bad job at making space for queer people outside of those very specific venues. Is that just because of the kind of misogyny and racism and xenophobia that we see in general, like in society, and it bleeds into hospitality? Or is it just that people, like when a lot of these businesses were established, people just weren't out in the same way? It wasn't.
I guess it's like like I'll be working a Friday night sometimes and like a queer couple come in through the door and I'm like, it's like there's literally a light around them. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, it's just like, and then you like, you're just like, there's a straight table and there's a queer table. And it's just like, why is this table blinding me because it's so amazing? And then this one is literally like looking into a black hole. Do you know, like what is happening? So that gives me so much joy and it doesn't happen all the time. But when the gays are out, I feel like there'll be like a night, like a Friday night. And I'm like, oh my God, the gays are out tonight. This is great.
It does make your job more fun. And I can't explain why it's so much nicer.
I think it's nicer to, because in a sense, when you're working in a restaurant, you're hosting people. You're hosting people, they're having an experience. You're in charge of them having a good experience. And I guess it's nicer to host and give people a good experience if they are kind of like, have more in common with you, if they're queer, if you share the same trauma. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, let's make this fun for you, because it's a treat, especially now going out for food. It's a treat.
I think you bring up something really interesting, and I think this is sort of true of all people, where like there's so much mask wearing when you work front of house and you're like, oh, how was it? And like, maybe you care, maybe you don't, but like there's this, you're doing your like, I am waitressing now sort of energy. And when you have a table where you can like put that down for a second and just be yourself, it's a really nice feeling. And whether that's because they speak the same language as you, or they're from the same community of origin, or you're all queer, or like maybe, I don't know, you ended up like going to the same college or whatever the thing might be, when you can sort of in a very busy service, take that mask off for a second and be like, I see you.
It's just like a little bit of respite, isn't it? It's just like taking a breath.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally what it is. It feels like a little break.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it's like coming up for air in a way, like, and it's I think it's funny when like, you know, like how a lot of the time people are like, you're like, hi, how are you? And they're like, good, how are you? And you're like, do you want to know how I am? Is that a real question? Because I'm gonna say, yeah, I'm great, but I've already had a full-on day doing my other job and now I'm exhausted. I would really like to maybe be sitting in your chair, but I'm not, because I'm here serving you. So that's how I am, but thanks for asking. Like, you're not going to answer like that.
I always used to just say, I'm living the dream. And that way people could laugh if they were any crack. And then the like, the facade was almost broken where they were like, ah, oh, you're at work. Just like I was just at work. And so then that pretense is sort of more relaxed. But it is, yeah, it's like this space where you, the moments where you don't have to do that feel really nice.
Yeah, totally. The more, because I guess it's quite an exhausting job anyway. And then the more you've got it, because like, I mean, like we all deserve an Oscar for fuck's sake. Like we, I walk away from some tables and I'm like, who was that person? Who, what just came out of me? Do you know what I mean? And that's when I really need to try because I'm like exhausted or something. And then you like really are just like, okay, wall is up. Let's stick the face on. Like, let's stick that mask on.
I can't believe the conversations that I've cared about in my life at a table where I'm having the conversation. And I'm like, I know that I probably don't care about this, but now that I've pretended to care about it, I kind of do. And I'm like, tell me about your garden. Go on. Come on back and tell me. And I think it's something I used to tell my team all the time, but I'd be like, just find like the one thing that you're curious about, even if it's like hate curiosity, and lean on that.
Yeah.
Because like, if you pretend to give a shit, it'll be so much easier than just masking your hatred.
I quite like winding up like the straight men on the table. That's like a fun thing that I like to do, and they have a laugh with it. Like I do pride myself in being like a good people's person, and I'm able to talk to people. And it's just always when there's a dad joke, you just always take the piss out of the person doing the dad joke. You know, it's like any allergies, it's like, oh, bad food, and I'm like, ha ha. You know, like, haha, stare at them, and I'm like, that's funny, and they're like, oh, and then everyone laughs. Yeah, I'm like, oh, I haven't heard that one before. You know, like quite dry humor.
It's also nice when you, yeah, and when you work somewhere where it's permissive to like read the room and treat the table how you like stretch it a little, and if you're good at that and you're given the freedom to do it.
I mean, sometimes it doesn't land. Sometimes I had such a funny thing that happened the other day. Like, this American girl came in from San Francisco, and she was really bubbly and great and like a really like nice person to just chat to. And then she was like, so what's like the favorite things? And I was like, oh, the halloumi, the latkes, although like these things change on a daily basis for me. It depends what mood I'm in. But I was like, oh, the halloumi is amazing. And she looked at me and I thought she was joking. And she went, what's halloumi? And I literally stared at her and I went, are you serious? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, it's a Cypriotic cheese. But I thought she was joking, and then it was like that kind of thing. And she was like, it landed with her. She was like, can you help my ignorant ass? Like, what's happening to this menu? Like, how does it work? Kind of thing.
That's honestly so funny. What a fuck up from you.
Literally, I was like, are you serious? And she was like, yeah. And like, I say it all in my face. Like, my face says everything. Like, although I want to try hide it, my face. That when the eyebrows come down, you know I'm probably going to murder someone. Like, you know I can't hide anything. So she definitely had a sassy gay that day. Slating her for not knowing what halloumi was. And she was like, I don't know if I'm a European cheese. I was like, okay.
Do you ever feel like... Okay, so I worked with like a very sassy Italian who, when people would complain about the wait time, she'd be like, sir, what is this? And everyone was like, oh. And I was like, as a North American, I was like, if I said that to a table, I would get fired. Do you know what I mean? And in some ways, I feel like being like a sassy queer, you do sort of have the latitude to do something incredibly rude. And people are like,
literally, it's like, I'm literally telling you to fuck off to your face. And you're like, give me more, give me more. It's quite funny. Yeah, because it's like, oh, they're just a sassy gay having a good time.
Yeah, me and a friend of mine were talking recently, and they were like, I really had to do like some inner work on myself to understand like what was being fun and what was like isolating myself because of my cruelty. And I was like, but they were kind of right. It's hard to know. And it's the same thing being like, am I taking the piss, or have I actually grown hatred in my heart for this person who like just doesn't understand the truth?
Yeah.
It's hard to, you have to keep it in check.
Yeah.
Because otherwise.
I guess, yeah. And I think I'm quite a dry, sarcastic person. So sometimes if I read someone being sarcastic as well, but they're being fully honest. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than when you think somebody's deadpanning with you and you're like, oh, we're having fun. Yeah. And then it's like,
and
no,
it's
no.
like, oh, I've just filed. Cool.
Yeah. It's not good at all. Okay. I just want to ask you a serious question.
Go for it. I love serious questions.
It feels like transphobia in this country is getting worse and worse. How can teams support their trans and gender nonconforming colleagues in this climate?
I think there's like the bare minimum you can do. And I think that's like, there's lots of things just around using the correct pronouns on like workplace and things like this, and kind of just asking people their identities or pronouns or whatever when you first meet them, and kind of, I guess it all reflects in the actual team that you've already got. I think like identifying as a trans person and then coming into an extremely straight workforce, I think that is quite daunting. And then because obviously you're like trying to mask everything as well, and you're trying to pass, and I think that that's like a job in itself. So I think the more that it's visible in your team, I think the better, the more representation basically, the better. Like, and I think there's more representation happening globally of like queer and trans people, but then like you said, like the government's cracking down on like everything to do with like trans people at the moment, and it's kind of like they're just fully targeting that. And I think it's hard to say that, again, it's hard to say that you're not political as a restaurant if you are raising money for a trans charity and then the government's basically trying to essentially just like fucking exterminate trans people. Like, you can't say you're not political. So I think that's like one of the main things that you could do is like visibility and inclusivity. And I think like I get misgendered every day at work by customers, and like I get called sir, which I hate, sir, bro, mate, and like obviously these are like bro is obviously quite like a gendered thing, mate maybe not, but coming from a straight white man, that's okay. Or like give the man your plate or something, and I'm just like, you just like wince a little bit inside. And like I was talking to my manager the other day and was like, oh, like that's just hate speech in a sense. They're not aware they're doing it. And they're probably not aware that even like they thems exist, but you know, but it's like, it still does affect me. And I kind of just have to deal with that throughout the day. And then when I, that's when like, it's like, oh, okay, I can actually go back to my people that actually know what my pronouns are, you know? And then my boss was like, well, you can correct them. And I was like, but I'm also not going to do that. I'm also not going to be like, ah, let me just stop you there. I'm not sir. And I'm madam. Like a Madam X or whatever, do you know what I mean? Like I'm, you can't be like, no, sorry, I'm a they them. So, and then you open up a whole tin of worms of being like, what's that? And then it's like, oh, sounds like you're talking about an object. It's like, yeah, that's me. Well done, cheers. You know it. Yeah. So I guess you're always protecting yourself from that as well, because you're just like, okay, here's another thing.
Well, and it's like, what's more traumatic, to like withstand the misgendering or to have to literally bring it up to every person that walks through the door to varying results?
Yeah. And I think like one thing that I do, like I run shifts as a supervisor, and I, whenever I'm running a shift, and it's like, because a lot of the team are queer, and I just always say like, if there's a table you don't want to be serving, making you feel uncomfortable, tell me and I'll do it, because you don't get paid enough to deal with that. I mean, like, no one gets paid enough to deal with that shit, but like, I get paid more than you, so I should be dealing with that. Like, I'm the senior one on the shift, so I will deal with that. Do you know what I mean? And it's like when we had a trans girl working with us, I just said to her whenever, like, if there was sometimes a transphobic customer or something, I was just like, you just literally don't even need to deal with that. Like, or swap section, or just even be like, just leave, do you know what I mean, if you don't want to be here, because but it's like, I can't leave because I need money. You know, so it's like, I just got to deal with these microaggressions throughout my work, you know. So yeah, I guess it's support from like the management team. I think it's like, you shouldn't deal with that as an individual. Like, your responsibility is to run your section and get me those fucking tables back on time. So you focus on that, and then if anything else makes you feel uncomfortable, you let us know and we deal with that, because we can. I like to think that Bubbler is very much so good at that, but it also does come from different managers. Do you know what I mean? Like, it can be a blanket thing, but then different managers have obviously got different mindsets and things like that. I think if we ever had a transphobe in the company, we'd probably just get rid. Like, it's...
Yeah, totally. And I think, too, it's not about... I would never expect there to be no transphobia in any business because it's a cis world. It's the same way that I expect white supremacy in every business because it's a white supremacist world. Like, I expect homophobia. Like, those things will exist because that's the structure that we live under. It's about how, what do we do with them and how do we handle them when they do come up? Yeah. So it's not about like, we expect this to never happen. It's about like, well, how do you as a business manage when it does? Can that person easily give away a table to you? If that person needs a little bit of time off or if they need some mental health days because there's so much transphobia around and it's fucking up their depression, like, give them those days. Like, you know, it's not that those things happen. It's how do you respond to them?
Like, we've got mental health days that you can just message and be like, I can't today. And there's no questions asked. It's just you call your mental health day and that's it. It's like, you don't want to be like asked why. Because it's like, no, I'm processing that myself. I can't tell you as well, you know what I mean? And I think that's really important. I think a lot of places don't actually do that. I mean, it's an unpaid mental health day, but I think it's like, which then again, I feel like everybody stresses these days are money as well. So it's, that is anxiety driven as well. So it's, but it goes down to like, you can't control the people that come in through the door. So there is a lack of power in that sense when it comes to restaurants. Like, you can't be like, oh, and like quiz them on like who RuPaul the drag queen is, do you know what I mean? And if they don't know, it's like, sorry, you can't.
Also, fuck it.
Yeah, literally. I mean, that's the only thing that I can do.
But the they'd all be like, yeah, we know RuPaul. And I'd be like, get out. Name anyone else.
Anyone else? Like, who? Like, George Michael. Give it to me. Name a George Michael song, otherwise, you're not coming in through the door. I'm actually obsessed with George Michael at the moment. I've decided that if he was still alive, he would be married to me.
He is one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my life. I can't believe he's dead. And I'm really sorry that he ran his car into that photo development shop before he died. Because the optics were not good. Also, I recently learned something about another controversial queer who's unfortunately still with us. So I found out about Boy George because I was watching this documentary about the making of the musical Taboo based on Boy George's life. And my friend Josh was like, isn't it crazy how they kidnapped that person and went to jail and then immediately went on Celebrity Big Brother and we all just forgot about it. And I was like, what? Did you know about this? No idea. So they went, Boy George like kidnapped a sex worker and like held him captive in a basement and it was so fucked up. He went to jail. And then when he got out of jail, he like immediately went into the Celeb Big Brother house and everyone was like, this is fun. And I guess the parole officer just had like a very easy time because he was there. Obviously, we didn't have to drag him down. And everyone just had collective amnesia. And now he's on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills being friends with Dori Kemsley.
Like, what? How can this happen to what? No, I didn't know that.
I was like, that's honestly pretty wild. And like, listen, I believe we all make mistakes and I guess it's possible to accidentally kidnap someone and it go really badly for you and maybe you're on drugs and you then become a better person. So I'm not saying that like Boy George doesn't deserve like to be rehabilitated, but what I am saying is it's weird that nobody mentioned it.
Yes. Well, it's probably like, I mean, there was probably something else happening with like the royal family or something that was more important. You know what I mean? It's just the way that these things are like,
more important than Boy George being absolved via Celebrity Big Brother?
Space.
All right, tell me what the biggest thing is that you'd love to see happen in hospitality across the board.
That we all get paid properly.
What is next for you? What's coming up? What are you doing with Wild Nutrition? Tell us everything.
Well, yeah, just finished my BSc. So, and now I've got my master's coming up at the end of September. So that'll be in sports and exercise nutrition. So now I'm just working at the Blur, doing my bit, and then also got my clients, which is like slowly growing. It takes like starting your own business is a bit of a slog, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's weird. No one ever mentions that.
It's strange. Honestly, I wasn't ready for it, believe me. For the summer period, I'm doing this like picnic box thing. So it's kind of like, all hope like homemade food, basically like home cooked kind of style food, like very hearty, yummy dips, and everything's nutritious, delicious, but it's like you've got your treats in there and it's basically everything you need for a picnic. So yeah, I'm just doing that like for every Sunday until I go and do my master's. So it's kind of like, I'm like, oh, maybe it'll help me save up for my master's, but also no pressure on it because it's kind of just a fun little venture to get my name out there. So I'm doing that.
And where can people retrieve a picnic basket?
Well, you come to Bubbler Spitalfields every Sunday morning and you pick it up from there. So they're letting me use it as a pickup location, which is very lovely of them. And also the Leytonstone and Leighton area, because that's where I live. So I'll be doing it there as well. So
cute. And do people have to sign up and get one, or can they just arrive and
they've got to buy it online via my website? But it's the easiest website to use. It's so easy to spend money on there. Like, do it.
We will link it in the show notes below and people can picnic with Wild Nutrition this summer.
Yeah. And then it's got all the info about my practice and what I do and that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's kind of like, I've always wanted to do something like that. And I guess I'm kind of going down the same vein as like my sister and my mum doing catering and things like that. So it's, which I never thought I'd do.
You can run, but you can't hide.
I love it though. Like, baking brings me so much joy. It's like, I made brownies the other day and I was like, fucking hell, this is like, great. When it turns out right, if it's not right, you're like, never again, fuck this, why did I not just go to like a bakery down the road and get a fucking brownie, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Every time that happens I think to myself, I could buy this.
But I make a mean brownie. I've mastered the recipe, by the way, so just so you all know.
Well, if I don't get one the next time I see you,
you will, I promise.
Friends off. Where can people find you on the internet?
So on the internet, it's www.wild-nutrition.com. So that's my website. And then Instagram is wild.nutrition. And it's spelled W-Y-L-D-E because it's my mum's maiden name and there's like a whole history there. So yeah.
I just want to do a few quick fire questions with you before I let you go. So first thing that comes to mind, what is your favorite place to travel food-wise?
Greece.
Who is your favorite pop icon?
Lady Gaga.
What's the best meal you've had in the past month?
Paella in Spain, in Madrid.
What is your favorite building in London?
I kind of like the Shard, you know. Like, I don't know what it is. There's something about it that makes you just want to sit on it. Do you know what
I mean? I love her 100%. For that reason. I think spread. Yeah, can't afford to get a room. May as well sit on it.
Right.
Who you can take a little longer with this one if you want, but who is your hospitality hero? So this can be anyone in the industry. It can be someone you've worked with, someone you haven't worked with, somebody you admire from afar, somebody that used to be your boss, I don't know, but somebody in the industry where you look at them and you go, very good.
I think my best mate Dermot, the queer chef. I think I'm literally like, I joke, but I'm like, babe, you're literally the hardest working queer in London. Like, you just go, babe, you keep going. And he's just Irish and fab. So it's like, I think, yeah, definitely him. Because I was like, oh my God, there's a gay in the kitchen. And then I was like, fuck, does this happen? And then I think it opened my mind to being like, oh, cool, okay. Yeah, definitely him.
There's space for us
here. Yes, yeah, we're allowed here.
Thank you so much for chatting with us. This has been an absolute joy.
Thank you for having me.
Beyond the Pass is produced by Kelly's Cause. For more information about Kelly's Cause, please head to kellyscause.com or find us on Instagram @kellyscause.